Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the sports betting network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN will join us, and we will go over what is really a pretty loaded slate here in the NFL. I'm trying to think back. I can't imagine we've had a week this good in the NFL, at least on paper, with these games that are really impactful. Now, part of it is, you know, the season gets a little longer here. The season goes on. These games are just naturally higher leverage. And I think you're looking at a bunch of them here where we got some good games. The Seahawks and the Rams is outstanding. A lot on the line. The one seed, the West, MVP. You look at Eagles, Lions. That's a really good game. Chiefs and Broncos goes a long way in the AFC West. Kind of an underrated game is Jags and Chargers, because that's one with a lot of wild card implications where Jags can be kind of on the same foot with the Chargers there if they can win it on the tiebreaker, where the Chargers can kind of put the Jags away, where there's not that many teams competing for these few wild card spots. That's a big game in that pecking order. So excited to talk to JVT. We'll talk a little college too, and I'll give you some picks here in college and one playoff pick I talked about a little bit with the Bear on Wednesday. I have come around to and actually think is a good bet in the college football to make the playoff market. But I'll start with NFL. Recording this as Jets and Patriots is going on, and my goodness, this is a tough watch with Fields. At some point, just play Brady Cook, the kid from Missouri. I mean, what are you doing? Just I know Glenn can be stubborn and admit, he doesn't want to admit, this was, a mistake. I mean, it didn't really make sense to sign Fields. I can understand calling a mistake, but you know what? You took a flyer. It's not like you're winning the Super Bowl anyway this year. Was it a flyer you needed to take? Probably not, but just saying, you know what? We took a shot. It didn't work. Move on. I mean, even if there's a 2% chance that Brady Cook is something, Brock Purdy as just anything but Fields is really, it's just brutal to watch as the Patriots are in control as of now. We'll see how this game plays out. Wouldn't expect the Jets to come back and win, but get to some plays here in the NFL, some ones I do like. I'll start with Miami and Washington just because these markets have been good to us. If you study these markets, I do think the books, they just don't account for it properly. We've had some success with Green Bay getting the first down, first quarter team to score first. Miami's taken the ball the past couple weeks. They won the toss against Buffalo. They took the ball. They won the toss against Baltimore. They took the ball. Pretty good chance Miami does start with the ball here. Washington has deferred, I believe, every time. So Miami first quarter is -125, and that's a situation where, if you start with the ball, you might get two out of the three possessions. You might score first. You might get an extra possession. There's just a lot of ways to win that. And you know what? You play the money line and decent chance, at least on offense, if barring a turnover, barring just giving up a – look, anything could lose, but barring giving up a touchdown on your first drive or points on your first drive, good chance either win or push that one. So I like Miami to get the first down, Miami first quarter, Miami to score first. All of those ones we look at when we think or we know a team is going to very likely start with the ball, I think apply to Miami. So Miami first quarter, Miami to get the first down is one I like there. I like Minnesota -2.5. You look at Chicago. They have created 20 turnovers, the Bears have. They are +14 in turnovers. And even with all of this turnover good fortune, they have still needed a bunch of very fortunate comebacks, a bunch of very fortunate wins. They couldn't beat Baltimore without Lamar. They needed a miracle last week against the Giants. Not miracle, but down 10 pretty late. The Raiders game, they could have easily lost. You just go through a lot of these games. A lot of them are comebacks that just a lot of fortune, a lot of good fortune here with comebacks and with turnovers. And Minnesota, I think, is a little healthier. They're not a great team by any stretch, and I haven't been impressed with McCarthy. How could you be? And even Justin Jefferson hasn't looked great. But they're coming off a stretch at Detroit, at the Chargers, the Eagles, the Ravens. This is one where they can finally catch their breath a little bit. I think Flores against Caleb Williams is a good matchup from Minnesota's perspective. So I like Minnesota laying the 2.5, and I like Atlanta -3.5 against Carolina here. I mean, I know Carolina beat them 30-0 early in the season. If you look at the box score, it wasn't a 30-0 typical box score. Atlanta, really bad field position. And I still think Atlanta's pretty talented. If you want to go look at DVOA, which I know some people, they poke holes in it because of certain things, but it's still a pretty well-respected metric for the most part, and it's a useful metric. Atlanta's one spot behind the Patriots, 18th, and Carolina's down to 27. To me, Atlanta still has good skill players, pretty good defense. I don't love Penix, and I don't love the coach. I mean, there's a lot of things not to like about the team. But, Carolina is awful. And if you just look at Atlanta's last month or so. They beat the Bills. Yes, they had the stinker, just complete clunker against Miami. That was when Cousins started. But they lost by one in New England. They missed an extra point. That's a forgivable result. And they lost in overtime to the Colts on a neutral field, which, you know, they could have won the game. They led late. That's a forgivable result. They haven't played that bad. I think they're better than a 3-6 team. I think they certainly are better than a 3-6 team. It's more like a mediocre team than a bad team. I don't love the idea of laying 3.5. That hook scares me. But you know what? If it lands on 3, I'll live with it. I do have a pretty good level of confidence here that the Falcons beat the Panthers. So Falcons minus 3.5, Vikings minus 2.5, Miami to score first in Miami first quarter, Miami first down. Those are all ones I like in the NFL. And then to the big games here, just a couple thoughts. And I'll add Seattle plus 3 here. I just think Seattle, there's such a massive advantage in special teams. You can go back to DVOA. Second best special teams, Rams are in the 24th. In special teams, massive advantage. Rams just demoted their kicker, which is a weird situation. They didn't cut him, but they demoted him, and they're going to, you know, switch kickers. They did that last week. They missed 5 field goals. They missed 3 extra points. They've had all sorts of problems in the kicking game. And I just think these teams are pretty even. I'll take the 3. I don't think you're going to get a 3.5. I think if a 3.5 popped up, it wouldn't last very long. Worry about Darnold in big games. Worry about Darnold against the Rams. He had his struggles against them last year, especially in the playoffs, but that 3 between two teams that are pretty equal, that Rams home field is not great. I'm surprised you're getting the full 3. I don't think you'll get any more. I don't think you'll get any more. I'd be more inclined to think it goes to 2.5 than 3.5. But I will take the Rams plus the 3. As far as Lions-Eagles, which is the other big game here in the NFC, Eagles laying 2.5 points here. There's not 2.5 points that separates these teams, but that is a huge home field. Philly at night, at home, Goff on the road, Goff outdoors. And I'm kind of a Goff believer. I think Goff's a little underrated. Not a great player, not a perfect player, but a good player. And I think kind of an underappreciated player at times, especially when he's in the right system, which he is. But outdoor in Philly, this is not his environment. I would expect Philly to probably win this game. One thing I did look at, though, with in terms of props, and there's a couple props that jump out to me. Jameson Williams, 46.5 receiving yards over. And I did a column for Fox Sports where I give a bet on every game. This is the one I used here. If you look at the last 3 games, 6 targets, 7 targets, 7 targets, 66 yards, 66 yards, and 119 yards. That's, again, that's 3 out of the last 4. He had that just odd kind of dud against Tampa on that Monday night game about a month or so ago. But he's getting targeted. He's getting yards. I know it's Philly. I know it's outdoors. It's a better defense than some of these defenses he played. But that 46.5. Does look a little light. Another prop I'm looking at, I know it's a Monday game, so you can revisit it, but I do think this line will move, is Brock Bowers over 70.5 receiving yards on Monday, just because anytime you have a star player, and he is, I think, the best tight end in the league, a star player who kind of gets underutilized in a heat, boy, one catch, 3 targets for 31 yards. I mean, how does that happen for somebody that good? And that was the last time we saw him on Thursday night. The Raiders, their coaching staff, have had plenty of time to think about that, mull on that, stew over, hey, how do we get him more touches? The game before, he had 12 catches, that incredible game, a bunch of touchdowns, 130 yards. I think you'll see, especially against the Cowboys defense, I think you'll see Bowers get more involved, more catches. I think that's 70.5. I would bet that now. And if nothing else, if you don't even like it, I would still bet it, just because I think that ticks up by the time the game comes around. He's a star player, standalone game. Wouldn't be surprised if that got up to 75.5, 77, 78.5 even. 8-yard move is a lot in a prop, but I think that Bowers number is going only up, and I would look to play over now. And you know what? If you want to go back and hedge for a middle on Monday, I do think that will be that opportunity. I think the 70.5 is light for all the reasons I mentioned. Playing against a bad defense and just the urgency, the emphasis on getting him reacclimated to the offense. So a bunch of picks I threw at you in the NFL. Just go quickly in college. I gave out the other day Minnesota plus the points, 25.5, 24.5. You know, shop around, best number against Oregon, who I think will kind of sleepwalk through this game. USC on deck. Tough physical game against Iowa last week. This could just be kind of a sandwich spot where they win the game, you know, 28-7, and don't really care about getting margin. And then Michigan State plus the 7, but those 7s are gone now. I don't feel as great about it. The 6.5. I know Michigan State is not a good team. It's just a rough spot here for Penn State. One I will add here, one I will look to add for college. I think Oklahoma plays Bama well here. Bama, I'm just not a believer. I know they didn't cover against LSU if you didn't get the best of the number. And I thought LSU really had chances where they left points on the board and they couldn't block Bama. Bama, I've talked about this. They got outgained in a bunch of these games. The stats haven't been pretty. And Oklahoma is elite defensively. And they got a quarterback that can run. That is giving Bama problems for a while. So Oklahoma plus six is one I will add there. Georgia, Texas, another big game. I think the right number is seven. So anything under, I'll lay it. Anything over, I'll take it at 6.5. I know Arch has played better, and Texas is really good defensively. And anytime you got a defense where you're getting points, a good defense and getting points is a good formula. It's a good combination. I think Georgia wins by a touchdown. I just think it's basically Arch Manning versus Kirby Smart, and Kirby Smart is not going to have a running game here for Texas to worry about. I don't think Texas had a hard time running the ball all year, so I do like Georgia minus the 6.5. That will be interesting there if Texas, either at two losses, even at three losses, what kind of playoff case they have, which brings me to Miami, which we talked about the other day with Bear. It keeps coming down. It's down to plus 490 at FanDuel. Bear has kind of talked me into, hey, if they win, which I'm not sure they will, they're going to be in, whether it's the ACC title game and they get help and they somehow get into the ACC title game, which is a stretch at this point. They're going to need a lot to go right. You know, Clemson to beat Louisville. I mean, there's a list. There's like 3-4 plus things that need to happen to get Miami back into that game. It's convoluted. And maybe that's not even their best path or most likely path. Maybe their most likely path is, you know what? You win the rest of your games. You sit there with two losses. You have a win over Notre Dame. And these teams ahead of you, these Oklahomas and Texas, and maybe Notre Dame gets picked off, and you just find yourself at 12 by the time we get to the selection here in a month or so. Not impossible. Not impossible. I think at 5-1 or so, I do think it's worth a bet. So a lot of picks, a lot of plays. I'll see what JVT thinks about that and much more. He's got plays of his own. That is next. This is the Shoulda Bet More podcast. Before I forget, rate, review, subscribe, wherever you get your podcasts. Here's JVT. All right, we are back. Shoulda Bet More podcast. You can catch him on Money Moves, where he gets paid probably not nearly enough to deal with Stormy Bonadoni. Pod to the Future with Mitch Moss. It is the great JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. JVT, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. It's a busy time. Those two things that I do, as well as I will be a permanent installment on Thursdays for Hardwood Handicappers, which is back now, your daily NBA betting podcast. So don't forget that, as well as the local shifts I do on ESPN Las Vegas.
I love it. Let's get right into it here. Big weekend of games in the NFL. I was just saying, this might be the best slate of the season to date. I've actually had some of these Sundays where I'm doing the pod. I'm like, man, these games weren't great. Those games were great. You got a lot here. Kansas City, Denver, huge for the division. We know the big NFC games. We'll start, though. I know you have a play in this Sunday morning game. I think people out west might sleep through this one. But Dolphins and Commanders, some 2.5, some 3. Is there anything you like here?
Yep. As much as I hate it, because I do have an alternate win total under for the season that looks okay so far. But give me the Miami Dolphins laying that short number out in Madrid against the Commanders. The Commanders, I think, defensively are very much in danger. This is a matchup of the 29th and 30th ranked defenses in the NFL. Miami is 29th, and Washington is 30th by a pretty decent margin in terms of expected points added per play by opponents. They're having a lot of issues. Their secondary is among the worst in the NFL. Again, they're 31st in EPA per pass allowed, and there is a pretty good margin between them and Dallas, who is 30th. I think Washington's just kind of on fumes here at this point, given the injuries, where they're at, and now to have to go out here on a neutral to take on Miami. Say what you want about the Dolphins, and I've said a lot. I don't think they're particularly good, but they're at least in slightly better form, showing a little bit of fight here. And I think this is all she wrote for Washington. And I think it's hard. You know, you're really good at these situations, Will, where it's like, look, this team was in an NFC Championship game, you know, just over a year ago, and now all of a sudden you're fighting for your life just to stay mathematically alive. I think that's mentally taxing for an old group of guys that have to go out there to Madrid and play the Dolphins.
Good point. And for those that don't know, you have, unfortunately, when we differ on picks, it doesn't just go poorly for me and you win. Like Colts-Dolphins week one, last week I had the Cardinals, you had the Seahawks. It's ugly for me. So this is a game I have a bet on, Bears-Vikings. I like Minnesota. Look at the Bears, plus 14 in turnovers. I don't think it's sustainable. I think it's a good spot for Minnesota, even though you watch them and there's things you don't like. Are you with me? Are you against me? What do you like here, Vikings Bears?
First off, I totally forgot about last week, Arizona and Seattle. that's just a weird thing. They all count the same. No, we're simpatico here, man. Give me Minnesota. You know, I don't really like J.J. McCarthy a ton. You know, I was in on Baltimore last week against your Vikings, and I don't know how you felt, but I thought Baltimore controlled that even more so than the final score indicated. You know, they started 0-4 in the red zone. They finally started to kind of break the back and get through. That could have been a wider margin. But for this, look, I think this actually serves McCarthy pretty nicely. He's taking on a Bears defense that doesn't rush the passer. He's not going to be moved off of his spot. He should be able to operate O'Connell's offense here. You know, against this secondary, I actually kind of like the YOLO balls that this dude will throw. You know, against Baltimore, it didn't really work, but against Chicago, I think you're going to be able to find some guys downfield. And to give him credit, as not a J.J. McCarthy hater, but a doubter, I will say, in that first quarter down the left sideline, he did find his guy against Baltimore, and it looked like he can do it. So in this situation, for a second consecutive game at home, being able to kind of stand in the pocket a little bit more, not be pressured as much, I would expect more from Minnesota and McCarthy. So I'm with you. I like him here against Chicago.
Let's get to some of the bigger games here. Chiefs-Broncos, you know, it's the NFL. Last time we saw Denver. Who wants to watch them? Who wants to bet them? That being said, I mean, they're home. They're getting 3.5. I don't have a play here. If I did, I know it's hard to fade the Chiefs. I would actually take the 3.5 with Denver. Are you taking it, laying it? What's your angle here, Chiefs and Broncos?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the ugliest thing I've ever seen. And you talk about being a doubter or a hater. I don't buy Bo Nix. I mean, this goes back to last year when they made it into the playoffs. I really think that this Broncos team is lucky to be where they're at, competing for a one seed. Having said that, give me Denver. I mean, my theory here, as I told Mitch Moss on Pod to the Futures earlier this week, and I don't know how you feel about it, but the AFC looks wide open and it looks somewhat weak. I think you can throw any of these 5 or 6 teams in a hat and pull one out, and I would tell you, here's your AFC rep, and I don't think any of us would be surprised from Denver, Indy, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Baltimore, and LA. I'll throw the Chargers in there too. So to that point, I don't think any one of them should be laying over a key number on the road. I think that Denver is a good defensive team that has kept their offense, that has been more abundant and apathetic and pathetic in every single one of these games and allowed them to win these games. And I think that I view that Kansas City lost to Buffalo in a slightly different light after watching Buffalo then go on to lose to Miami. I think all these teams kind of stink, and I don't think you're in a position to lay that kind of a number on the road against an opponent.
Yeah, just to follow up on that, the AFC is setting up where it's possible the top of the bracket, the top seeds, New England and Indy, and you go down the line, like that. Most people just like the 5, 6, 7 seeds more than 1, 2, 3, 4. If you get like Bills, Chiefs, Ravens, 5, 6, 7. Now, the Ravens will probably be the 4, but you get the idea. It's a weird scenario where the big boys are down towards the bottom and are going to be on the road, which I guess is an equalizer, but just an interesting kind of unique setup that we're possibly heading towards.
Yep, I would agree. I added Baltimore this week at 7-1 to win the AFC. You know, they're really in good form. And to your point, you know, the bottom just seems a little bit better. And I just think all of these teams have some really inherent weaknesses that we're seeing with every single one of them. And I think that would lend me toward taking some points when they're all meeting up with each other, especially if Kansas City continues to be priced the way that they are.
All right, big one, Philly and Detroit. To me, there's not – I would just take the points with whoever's the dog here because there's not that much that separates the team. And I actually think Detroit might be the slightly better team. That being said, Goff outdoors is something that terrifies me, even though I'm a Goff fan. I think he's kind of underrated. He gets a bad rap at times, even though he's not perfect. And I don't think he's elite, but I think he's pretty good. Boy, outdoors, Philly, hostile environment. If I had to, I'd probably take Philly here. I don't have a bet in this game. What are your thoughts? How are you handicapping it?
I'm slowly kind of like carving out the niche that the top two teams in the Eastern, or excuse me, in the Eastern Conference, in the NFC are Seattle and Philadelphia. I really like this Philadelphia team, especially the addition of Phillips. We see him kind of burst onto the scene a bit on Monday Night Football. I think that this is a defensive line that is starting to take a shape that it's had last year, right? Stout with guys who can stop the run, good edge rushers, and I think they're going to be able to match up here with Detroit and get this thing done. I don't know how much I trust Philly offensively. I know it's been kind of all over the place, but one thing I do trust is that they're still going to be able to test the secondary. It's been beat up with its own injuries. Give me Philadelphia here. I think they're going to be good. Now, one of the things is, I think it's a sneaky over game. One of the things that has stuck out when you look at some of the numbers for Philly, they're pretty good in a lot of different metrics, but they are limited in terms of stopping short yardage situations, and they don't cause explosive plays behind the backfield or in the backfield against the run, but they're good everywhere else, man. I like this team a lot, so let's go Philadelphia.
it would be very strange if they won it again, because what do you do with Sirianni? I don't think most people, you know, most people don't look at the team and, wow, that guy's a hell of a coach. What he did on Monday night was bizarre, but he went to a Super Bowl and lost the coin flip and went to another Super Bowl and won. If they make another deep run, I guess if he didn't win it, people say, oh, he only won one. He's got a good team. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting how we discuss Sirianni, and if he makes it wins another one, I mean, I don't really know, you know, how to discuss him. I don't think he's great, but you got to give him some credit.
Is it fair? Like, man, this is the first comp that comes to my mind. Would it be like if Tom Thibodeau actually won like a ring or two? You know,
it's not a bad one. I was thinking Les Miles at LSU years ago, or Ed Orgeron or something. So people, you just kind of go out of your way to not give him the credit, but it is bizarre.
It is weird. But hey, man, like maybe we're wrong. Like I always tell the story from last year, sitting in a cabana with Jonathan Davis, who writes our hockey articles, and Humans and Mitch and Paul, and all of them just bleeping all over Sirianni. And there's that Saints game. This dude's an idiot. Yeah. He has no idea what's going on.
So bad.
Yep. And it was. And then you fast forward, and they're beating the absolute dog bleep out of the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl, man. Like they're a good team. And I don't know how much Sirianni has to do with it, but at the very least, he's not driving the car off the road so far.
And you know what I will say, too, when you go back, and that mistake last year was, I think before the half, he went for it, where it's like, even if you got it, and they end up with nothing, even if you got it, you're not going to have time for more. You're going to kick the field goal anyway. The other night, he was overly aggressive. If you're going to make mistakes, and if you're going to be wrong on the side of being aggressive. I think that's just like the better side to be on, where if you're conservative, it hurts you more than being overly aggressive. And I think if you're going to fault Sirianni for anything, it's like, all right, he's reckless and going for it. But that's where you want to be wrong. You want to defer to that.
Yep, I would agree.
The other game, I don't think you have a play on it, but it's fascinating because there's so much on the line. It's interesting. Sam Darnold was making this point the other day. Sam Darnold was in this position last year. He's on a really good team, 14-2, eventually 14-3. But no guarantee of being the one seed, no guarantee of a division, anything, where he had could be the one seed, could be on the road wild card weekend. We know how that went, coincidentally, against the Rams. This game impacts the NFC West. It impacts the one seed. It impacts the MVP. Seahawks, Rams, Rams lane 3. I defer to Seattle just because of a massive special teams edge. Darnold against the Rams concerns me. What do you think?
I would agree. We're in the same boat here. I'm kind of holding out. I don't think it'll get to 3.5. We'll see. You know, it moved, I would say, somewhat easily to 3 -110. So there's like a small chance that maybe it gets to 3.5. And I think generally, I mean, you can tell with the market where it's at and where it's moved. There is more support and trust in the Los Angeles Rams. But as I just said, you know, I think there's a shot that this Seattle team might be the best in the NFC along with Philadelphia. I mean, they're so well balanced. You've brought up a great point in terms of the special teams, how good it's been. I mean, you go back to the New Orleans Saints game. They actually didn't really play that well on offense. Their special teams was incredible. They were dynamic. And I do think, look, congratulations to the Rams for the run they've been on. They really have not played that stiff of competition over the last 3 weeks, where they've dropped at least 34 points in each of their last three games. This is a completely different animal. And while I believe you, I echo what you're saying in terms of Darnold, especially remember last year against the Rams, that offensive line really let him down. He got hit a bunch, and he looked awful. But I think this offensive line is going to hold up a little bit better against the Rams secondary. You can go after. I'm very much in the corner of taking the points with Seattle. I just want to see if I can get 3.5.
If you like Seattle this week, oh boy, I can't imagine if 3.5 pop up. I can't imagine they would last
think
that
so.
Long. I would think.
But I know that I'm pretty sure I'm going to get 3 whenever I want. So that's why I'm just kind of holding out to see what's going to happen.
If you like Seattle this week, does it make sense to bet Darnold 10-1 MVP? Or is it, oh man, I just missed the better numbers, I'm going to sit it out? Well, how do you view the MVP race right now? Is there value anywhere?
Well, I have Sam Darnold at 80-1 to win MVP. So I'm really hoping that he can win this game, because then I'm in a really good position. You could argue this is an MVP eliminator between him and Darnold, or excuse me, between he and Stafford. But to your point, like I said this on Pod of the Futures, if you're just jumping in right now and you don't have anything in MVP and you're wondering what to do, I actually think you're taking a ticket on the two quarterbacks in this game. I think Stafford should be the favorite. I think May's at the top of the board. It's a reflection of liability more than anything else. And then if you look at Darnold at 10-1, for guys like Jonathan Taylor and Josh Allen to have better odds to win MVP than Darnold, who is the quarterback of a team who could be a one seed in his conference, that I think is a little ridiculous. And I think these two are worth adding. Even Stafford at 3-1, it's definitely worth it.
Would be a great story, too, and I just don't think the May story is there. He's young. All right, he's good, but I don't know. What's the narrative there? Stafford, there's a Lifetime Achievement Award, and he's never won it. You give
coming
it to
off
him
of
instead
year.
Of the one seed. Coming off of last year, coming off the injury in the back, all of that, and it's kind of let's give him his flowers. Darnold, I mean, that's a great story, too. Former elite prospect, top pick, turned into a journeyman, bounced around. It's a great redemption story. I think it's probably between those two. I mean, again, a lot can happen. It's not just between those two, but I agree. I think, you know, if you just tell me one of those teams is the one seed, that's probably who's going to be the MVP. I think it's that simple. Sort of like in college where it's Ohio State versus Indiana. You just tell me who wins that game, that's probably who's winning the Heisman.
I got to hit one of these big tickets. I mean, come on now. Law of averages. I got to hit one of these things.
Yeah, and as we're recording this, we just found out minutes ago. I was talking about this the other day. My buddy Mike had Cal Raleigh 80-1 for $500 to win MVP. And if you saw this, I'm curious if you've been monitoring this. Cal, she had this, I think, at 99% for Judge, and he only won by 20 points. Somebody knows something with these awards. I mean, somebody, there's an imbalance there between how much he won by and the uncertainty there in the Kalshi market.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to two. Like, we need more markets around these awards. I say it every single time, man. You know, finishing position over-unders, you know, right. A point spread in terms of total points or a spread in terms of first place votes, you know, whatever it is, it would be so much fun to have those. Now, that's information-based, obviously, and in today's day and age, considering everything that's happening, it's probably not going to happen. But that is pretty interesting. And then opening the can of worms to Kalshi and just, you know, these prediction markets. And I was talking about this the other day with Mitch about, like, look, I've got Sam Darnold at 81 to win MVP. He wins this game. I don't need to find anywhere that's a no. I can go and just, you know what I mean? I can just go find myself a hedge, if you will, and present one on these prediction markets. And that's an incredible thing.
I was thinking about that because I have Dart 22-1. And I was thinking about it before he got hurt. It's like, man, am I at the point where maybe I could just find a yes-no market? And then, of course, he has the concussion and that ticket is in some serious trouble now, as we know. All right, wrap up your college. Before we get to some games you like, let me throw this at you. I'll just kind of lead with this. Is there any team to make the college football playoff that you think is being underrated, slept on? I'll throw Miami at you. Bear has kind of talked me into this, where he thinks if they win out, the committee's going to find a way to put them in. I don't know if it's over Notre Dame, if these other teams knock each other off, but with the win over Notre Dame, he thinks they're plus 490, I think, right now at FanDuel to get in. I think Miami has value at least at plus 490. Would you agree with that? Are there any other teams where you think they got a path in that's good value?
I don't know. I can't really buy Miami. That seems a very far-fetched. Obviously, on the outside looking in the ACC, so you're just assuming an at-large. And a lot of things, I think, have to happen for that to get there. But who knows? I mean, the committee's done a lot of weird things. And relying on the fact that the team is a brand – I've seen crazier things, I would think. So, not crazy. And, of course, the head-to-head, as you mentioned, is pretty strong. I think of all these teams, and it leads into one of the games. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. The last four games, Arch Manning has looked a lot better.
He has.
And you look at these last two games, he's thrown for over 700 yards, 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. My man is feeling it. And I think that if this, you know, this wide receiver core, which got a little dinged up in the Vandy game, and this, you know, this defense, which has shown some warts, but they're still pretty solid, one of the better ones in the field, this offensive line started to play better. I think people might want to watch out for Texas. And I will say the thing that I think a lot of people have said, there is one team that has pushed Ohio State in this entire season, and that was week one where they played Texas at home. I think the Longhorns are a very dangerous team if they get in.
That's a really good defense. I mean, my concern would be you could look at Texas. You could say this about a lot of teams. You could certainly say it about the team they're playing in Georgia,
yep,
where they could have easily lost a lot of these games, Kentucky and Mississippi State. And a lot of it's the punt returner, where these teams, if they just kick it out of bounds, I mean, Texas probably has one or two more losses. That punt returner has been dynamite for Texas. Anything in Oklahoma and Alabama, or I'll just give you the floor. You can just kind of quickly here run through whatever else you like here in college.
Yeah, I mean, very strong lean toward Alabama. I feel like I'm almost kind of like putting my hand in the cookie jar where you're laying, like, was it 6 still across the board, 6.5? You know, what am I missing that it's underneath a touchdown? I understand how good Oklahoma's been on defense. Their offense stinks. And Alabama's defense has been pretty solid, man. Like, this is like a top 25 unit, a lot of different key metrics. And we know how good their offense can be by expected points added per dropback, 4th best team in the country. So I think Alabama at -6, I mean, we've kind of seen them passing these tests every single week. Last week against LSU and others, like, they're playing really well. So I like Alabama there. And as far as these other games are concerned, I'll throw a couple at you. Not the sexiest, but as Stormy has covered with me, I've got a pretty good read on some of these Mountain West games. I've had a pretty strong season with them. Colorado State, New Mexico. This one's going to be ugly, but CSU's catching 14.5. New Mexico is at the peak of its power rating right now. Colorado State is at the bottom of the barrel. They've been getting blown out almost every single week. Totally understandable why the market would be where it's at, but I'll play a little line exercise. New Mexico and UNLV are close to equals to one another, and yet UNLV was playing 4.5 at Colorado State last week, and that equates to about 10.5 at home. I don't think it should be this big for New Mexico. 14.5 is a really big number for a like-rated opponent. So give me Colorado State. And they've shown up in some weird spots. Remember, they blew out Fresno State a few weeks back. So this team can have it in them when they need to. And then Boise State, San Diego State, I'm going to roll with the Aztecs. Last week, my favorite bet of the week was Hawaii at home, and that had no problem against San Diego State. It's because they hadn't played an offense with a heartbeat. This is not an offense with a heartbeat. Maddox Madsen's out. The Boise offensive line is a little dinged up, and this offense isn't good. You can find 2.5 minus 115 or wait out, but I think even 3 is fair with San Diego State and a bounce back at home against Boise.
All right, last one. I'm going to throw this one at you. This is down now because the games are going on, but I think it was yesterday. OKC was plus 450 to get 70-plus wins and 22-1 to break the record and win 74-plus. I think both are very live. This team is a freight train. They're young. They're hungry. They're deep. All right, this guy gets a night off. We'll rest a couple guys. They can still beat you with their 8th, 9th, 10th guys. Do they want to do it? I'm not sure. But at plus 450 at 22-1, I like both of those. I gave out over 62.5 before the regular season. I feel pretty good about that. What am I on the right track, or you think that this is a stretch?
I could not agree more. You know, it's funny. I talked to Stormy about this the other day, where she asked me, like, you know, hey, what's one of your takeaways from the season so far? My takeaway was that OKC might be better than they were last year, and they might push for those 70 wins. You know, they're like you said, they're so good. And here's the thing that helps you, Will. They're not even fully healthy. Like, they haven't had Jalen Williams. They're asking these young guys like A.J. Mitchell and Aaron Wiggins to do things, and they're doing them. They're shooting over 40% from three. Like, they're having such a good push from these young developmental pieces. Let us not forget that Cason Wallace, who is a good defensive young guard who can fill every single category. Once you get Jalen Williams back, like, this team can push for those 70 wins, and I'll one-up you a little bit here. I think they might need every single one of them because I bleepin' love Denver. And Denver is not going to let them rest in any way, shape, or form. They're going to push them for the one seed. And I think that means that OKC knows they need to win as many games as possible because they don't want to go to Denver for a best-of-seven series at any point in that playoffs, most likely a Western Conference Finals. So I think that really helps you too, is that not only do they want to win these many games, not only are they not even healthy, they might need to win 70 games because the Denver Nuggets might be that good.
And the last thing on this, too, they're young, which a couple things. They're not at the point where they've won 3 or 4 of these, or the Durant Warriors or some of LeBron's teams where they're bored. They're still young. They're still hungry. And to your point, these 7, 8, 9, 10 guys, they haven't gotten paid yet. They haven't gotten the big contract. So they go out there. It's not like, hey, I'm in my 9th, 10th year. I'll see you in May. These guys all want to get paid. They want to make a name for themselves, whether that's, you know, staying with OKC or on another team. Maybe I'm just talking myself into it, but I think they're going to have the hunger where they get close enough. They might push for it in 70, 74. I don't know what's like off the table with this team. They're that good. I mean, they made the Lakers on Wednesday. It looked like a JV team, a Laker team that's played well.
Those last two games, I think, were like kind of what opened my eyes because, you know, like I took 7.5 with Golden State and Oklahoma City went out there and just walloped them. Like, we're in control the whole game, made it look easy. And then you come back the next game, to your point about the Lakers game, and I'm like, you know, I think I like the Oklahoma City Thunder, but I don't want to push it. Same thing. They just go out there, they mollywop Los Angeles, they dust their hands off, and they move on to the next. I don't, like, outside of, again, Denver, I don't think there is a team that is realistically pushing them at all.
JVT, you're the best, man. Give us a rundown where we can find you.
At me, JVT, is pretty much every single social media platform. You can find me there. Money Moves from 11 to 1 Pacific, 2 to 4 Eastern. And like that, and rate and review, subscribe wherever you get your pods, as well as Pod of the Futures and Hardwood Handicappers.
JVT, appreciate it, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, rate, review, subscribe. Thanks to JVT. Thank you guys for listening, and we will be back Monday. See you then.